This week in the review, we get a proper test match to finish the Ashes. We dissect that and the whole series. Is it too early to talk rugby league? Never. We dive into a few of the funniest sides of what's happening in and around the game of rugby league. And just so you know, regular transmission will be restored next week for the pod. So look forward to a whole bunch of new episodes there as well. Let's get on with it. I'm Ian Hawkins, and this is Sport is Life. The purpose of sport, as I see it, is to see your vision become a reality. Find your voice, create strong connections, and learn to trust your body. Okay, Steve, there you go.
Good, thanks, Hawk. How are you, mate? We've gotten through the last of the Ashes. You've been enjoying that?
I have, mate. Yeah, it's been good to have some time off and watch plenty of it. And I was tempted to get out there for day five when they had the cheap tickets, but it was pretty... I took the soft option. It's pretty warm here in Sydney at the moment, so yeah. I thought air-conditioned home, that's probably the better way to go. I stand by my decision.
Good. At least you got the option of going to day five, mate. Plenty around the country. didn't get close. I unfortunately had a... talking about my trip down to Melbourne, had a work colleague who had tickets for day three and four and flew down. Only to not be able to see any. Didn't see any cricket at all. So, and he's a cricket tragic, a good bloke, and yeah, missed cricket altogether. Unfortunately, in Melbourne. So, at least the Sydney people got the option to see see day five.
Oh, mate! Once his pain is lapsed, you'll be able to give him shit about that all
year. Yeah, it's already started. Didn't that long?
It's so good, poor bastard. I just remember having a thought, middle of day two, or might have even been day three. Oh, anyway, somewhere along the line, just going, oh, this is what we all wanted from the test series. Like, if you're good enough, you'll get runs, big scores, still enough in the pitch so that the bowlers stay interested. Like, it was a proper test match that I think we were expecting five of those, which we might have been a bit ambitious for.
Yeah.
But it shows that two things is... the pitch plays a huge factor, obviously, but it's just the application. Like, how good was it? Like, I don't know about you, but I was like my son summed it up best when Bethel was batting his. I hope he just gets his 100 and then gets out. Because it was kind of like, you don't want him to come that far and miss out. He was actually really good to watch, wasn't he?
He was. It was certainly a bit of a shining light. He did fairly well in the back end of that Melbourne test in the second innings as well. But yeah, you spot on, mate. A few hundreds. It was almost like proper test cricket, right? You batted well, you scored 100, and then you bowled well and you took wickets. So to see both teams, you know, have a crack at it, goes deep to day five. It was excellent. So it was a shame that we didn't get more of that because obviously the wickets didn't help, but I think the way they played in a few instances, both sides sort of saw shorter test matches, but we got the last one.
Yeah, that's what matters from a supporter point of view. Steve Smith, like, he was at his absolute best from that sort of eccentric, crazy... On the great cricketer, I think I mentioned last week, they call him Spectrum Bradman. In other words, he's that good, but he's also probably just a little bit on the spectrum, or maybe a lot. But they were going about his grip, his bottom hand is so like almost inverted that it allows him to play it like almost like it's his top hand, so he can play bottom hand dominant, but still hit it. Wherever he wants without getting in there. It's actually incredible to watch.
Yeah, he's just different, right? And I say that in the nicest way possible. I can't remember anything in our time, someone batting like it. You know, he had one of the press conferences after the test. He was talking about, you know, he's quite animated after each ball. And that was more about him just being in the zone and working out where his bottom hand was. So, it looks like it's silly to people who doesn't know, you know, not sure what he's doing, but it's all method to the madness sort of thing.
It is. But did you notice in that interview, he was standing there normally, and then the moment they brought it up, he started adjusting all his gear again?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. He's just genuinely in a different world.
He is, mate. And I think it was Kerry O'Keefe was saying he's He's typically pretty shy. I've got a photo with my mate whose birthday is January 3, so we'd always go there on his birthday, getting a photo with him when he was only sort of new in the team. Yeah. And he just looks real shy, almost uncomfortable with that sort of fame. He's obviously come a long way since then. Yeah. But yeah, he's different. And did you see the little clip? I don't know if it was on the actual coverage, but Channel 7 put it in their socials of they're doing the presentation and they're standing there in the background doing shadow batting and talking about batting. Like they just can't stop.
Nuffies. Yeah, they love it. Yeah. He just lives and breathes it, doesn't he? You can imagine what he's like every day of the week. He just can't get enough of it. So it's it's a huge effort. You know, he's second only to Bradman with Ashes runs. Like it's what he's done, you know, someone who started out as a bit of a spinner and let's see how he goes as a young fellow for him to score the amount of runs he has is huge. And yeah, he just gets in the zone and he's a very different man.
Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned Bradman. Bradman had a grip that was similar to an extent, like his was quite turned, so he was very wristy. And so he's probably the closest from that perspective too. And Bradman used to shuffle across the pitch a little bit and use his hand-eye coordination, which they both obviously have at a different class to most people because he can get himself in all sorts of positions. And on that, Travis Head, he was interviewed by one of them. I can't remember. Mate, I've watched that many highlights and so on in the last few days. How did you prepare? He said, I spent a heap of nights rolling around in my bed thinking about how they were going to bowl to me. So even that, he's just so casual about it. But what he did, it does show, is that he was thinking about what ways they would, and he did mention how, well, if I move around the crease, then it's going to be hard for them to bowl to me. And again, just trusting his eye.
Yeah.
And those were the two guys that consistently went in it better than everyone else because they were consistently inconsistent in how they approached each ball.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. I mean, Head was what he did. Especially stepping up to the opener slot, the way he did it. You know, look, he obviously scores at a quicker rate than most of the others, but most of the time the cricket shots are still fairly traditional sort of cricket shots. Obviously, you can get a little bit wild from time to time, but, yeah, he's another one that just the hand-eye coordination must be amazing for both of them. They're just they're special, right? They're batting in special. The top four for Australia. You don't achieve that for they're not handing that out free, mate.
No, special for a whole lot of reasons. And those sort of two characters in any teams I've played in weren't necessarily the best teams. Actually, usually like quite the opposite. They would carry on like in either of those sort of personalities, but they tended to do that to make up for their lack of ability. Whereas they've just got everything going on.
They've got everything going. I don't think Head missed out with the celebrations either by the looks of it. So he just welds himself onto the average Aussie more and more, old Trevor said.
He does. And he actually said he was conscious of it after the Adelaide test when he went down and kissed the pitch. He just thought, what would the guys on the hill really like lap up? So he's conscious of it.
Yeah, a bit of a character.
Oh, 100%. He'd be good fun to go out with, I reckon.
Yeah.
It was pretty special, again, to come back to Bethel, seeing his family sitting there on the sideline. Anyone who's been a sporting parent knows what it's like, how special those moments are. But could you imagine that? You've got the cameras on you. You're sitting through the whole innings. And then he just was so calm in the 90s.
Yeah.
He just waited. He was patient, didn't look like getting out, didn't get looking nervous, and then needs a few more, so he just skips down the track and just lobs it. He didn't smash it. He just sort of lobbed it over the fence. Like he looks like he's going to be a class act for a long time.
Yeah, he does. For someone who hasn't had the experience even at county cricket, of spending a lot of time in the middle, scoring big runs, I don't know, it just seemed to come natural for him, didn't it? I'm sure he's worked hard, even though he's still a young fella, but... he could be something with a little bit different with the Poms. He could be something a little bit special. Again, similar to Travis Head a little bit where, the scoring was a little high, but he wasn't doing anything too stupid. You know, he was taking some calculated risk. He was waiting for the bad ball, so to speak. So, he could be one in, 4 years' time when they come back. Let's hope they come back with a few more around him than they did this year, but... Yeah, you never know, mate. He's very, very early on in his career, so see what happens.
He left the ball very well.
Mm.
And I think that's the thing they didn't do well, most of them. They just couldn't resist playing those shots. And when Root got runs and in the 200s he got, and when Bethel did, and even the times when Crawley did, they were playing a lot more composed and patient and not trying to... Yeah, I mean, it didn't resemble Baz ball at all in the end. Like, it was just playing proper test cricket, and as you say, still scoring at a decent clip.
Yeah, there's no doubt that's the new way. You mentioned India last week, mate. That's the new way of test cricket. As much as some of us traditionalists would like to hang on to the old days, reality is the run rate is going to be higher, but it's still doing it, you know, with the least risk as possible, trying to get that balance. And, you know, Bethel only played a couple of the tests admittedly, but they were their best batsmen, Crawley to a lesser degree, and they did still play a little bit more traditional. You know, you talk about leave the ball. The stats on Duckett leaving the ball for an opener never been seen before. So, you know, you can't do that, especially in Australia with the pitches the way they are. It's just, it's a recipe for disaster, right? But look, good on him for doing it. You know, and to your point around Root, while he certainly didn't get anywhere near winning a series, he got his first victory. He got his first 100 in Australia. So. Yeah, maybe I think that balance is something they got to try and push for, mate.
Yeah, absolutely. Bethel apparently grew up in Barbados, and when they were talking to his dad, he never said, "Oh, you know, he always wanted to play for England." It was always he always wanted to play Test cricket. He always wanted to play that next level. He loved the game, played so much. Apparently, Joe Root was over there and met him when he was 12, and he was telling his county to sign him up because he was that much better than the other kids. Like, he was playing two ages up. And just was unbelievable. So, yeah, I'd say he'll be around for a fair while. We all laughed when they threw him in at number three, having not scored a first-class 100, but they obviously knew what they were doing.
Yeah, it was one hell of a risk in Melbourne, I think, was the first one, if not the third test. But, yeah, he's certainly something for the future, mate. So hopefully for his sake and even England, he can keep working hard and come back in a few years' time.
Yep. All right, enough about them. Oh, no, I did want to say one more thing. There's a quick snippet I saw from KP, and he was talking about, everyone's talking about reviews and we're going to examine all these different things. And he said, ultimately, it comes down to a really simple thing. And this is how sums up the series for me. He goes, there's only five or six of the English players who can compete with Australia in those conditions. I think that's pretty much it. You can make up a whole lot of other stories, but that's the reality.
Yeah, 100%, mate. Unfortunately, they weren't good enough. Now, I don't know enough about the county cricket. Did they pick the right 11? If they're the best 11 they got, they're just not going to beat Australia out here. And 4-1's probably pretty reasonable on what it could. There's a couple of tests that could have gone either way, even the one they won. But at the end of the day, that 11 isn't good enough to beat the Australian side. So they either need to start developing a better bunch of cricketers coming through for the next few series, or they've got to understand that they're not at that level.
It's
brutal and cold.
They just didn't win the big moments.
No.
Anyway, we drifted into them again. Player of the series, I think, like, I could have seen it going either way, but I think the fact that you've got to get 20 wickets to win test matches, and Stark stood up without his usual teammates in the bowling attack. Plus crucial runs a couple of times when we really needed them. I think it's a pretty safe bet that he gets it. Is that
fair, mate? Obviously, Head and Kerry had big series for us. But to your point, when it was there to be won, those early test matches especially, while we can always debate on the Australian top order, our bowling attack was the one that wasn't as regular as normal. As good as the guys were that come in, you know, the Nesses and the Bolands especially, but they weren't, our what we thought we were going to go in with. And for Stark to do what he did, take the wickets early, get us out of trouble with the bat, pretty impressive. So, you're not going to get an argument out of me with Stark. As I said, Kerry, for a keeper to average 45, he had high 20-odd catches in the series and score 100, including keeping up with the stumps that we've just marvelled at. And then Kerry scoring 600-odd runs at, over 60. moving up the order. All three of them did good. But yeah, probably Stark just gets the nod for me as well, mate.
Yeah, good call. I was just trying to look it up now, how many wickets Nisa took, but it was like, I think it got at one point in the test, it was up at fourth or fifth for the series, and he only played three matches?
Took 15 at 19.
Yeah.
So you can't knock what he did. He came into the side and had immediate effect from the get-go. He actually played some key innings with the bat as well.
He did, yeah.
He went big in Melbourne.
Yeah, the one in Brisbane when we really needed it. Yeah, absolutely.
And then even the Night Watchman role he played in Sydney, just gone. Yeah. So he was another one, mate. I mean, you can't put him into the star category. He only played the three, but another one that did a huge job when he needed to, mate.
Yeah. Peterson also said that the best English team to travel there in however long, he said, couldn't beat Australia's B team. And what was probably a little bit extreme, the reality is no Hazelwood for the whole series. Lyon only played, was it two tests? And he only bowled 10 overs in one of them. And Cummins played only the one test as well.
So, yeah, Smith missed a test match as well, you know, and obviously the, you know, a rookie opener, a bit of Head and Khawaja changing roles. There was a lot of things that we could have looked back on now if we had lost the series and sort of used as an excuse, no question. And they would have certainly jumped on, but yeah, they just weren't good enough, mate. So, and good on the Aussies. We shouldn't be taking anything away from them. They played to the level they did to make sure that the Pommies weren't good enough, right?
Mm-hmm. Won the big moments because it was more even than 4-1 suggests. But that's
you reckon Nessa would have been the type of guy to be sitting next to Ed having a beer, mate?
I reckon.
Just get the impression he wouldn't have missed out.
Yeah. Well, what were we talking about? Was it? What he has his own. Has his own. Like people have coffee trucks. He has a beer truck.
What, does he really? Oh, there you go. So I can still spot him, mate, from a mile away, you reckon? Yeah, no, he just gets the impression as a bit of a knock-around fella as well that he wouldn't mind a couple of frosty ones.
He's got a mobile beer truck up in Brisbane.
There you go. Well, don't let Head know about that.
That's a great concept, though, isn't it? Oh, fantastic. What else have we got? Oh, Aussie's farewell. No fairy tale with the runs, but it was good to see he was embraced by the Sydney public, as they always do for their locals, even though he did go and play a fair bit in Queensland and a bit in South Australia too, is that right?
Yeah, maybe in the early days, mate, yeah. But, yeah, it was good for him. They certainly gave him warm reception and a fitting goodbye at the end. He didn't get the runs, but as he said in the interview, I think there was a fair bit of emotion there. So he was just more about trying to get the win on his last test to get one more. But, you look back, 88 test matches is a fair knock. He's, should be bloody proud of it.
100%. And just a quick comparison. So he scored 6,000 runs at just under 43. And people will say what they say about how he went. But Mark Waugh, his record is maybe not even as good. I know
is that right?
The quality of bowling might be seen as better back then, but whereas his test batting average, he's 41.81. He's got 8,000 runs, and he did score, like, I think there was a stat there for a while when he scored 100, we always won. So he scored them in important moments, but a bit of perspective there. It's if you can score 6,000 test runs and get them at just under 43. That's a pretty impressive career. Fuck, I'd take one test, but that's unbelievable.
Yeah, no, it's certainly certainly something to be proud of. He was he was pretty humble on a few interviews after the game, and was very grateful and thankful to the family and his teammates. So it was good that he got the farewell he wanted, mate.
Absolutely. And we were just touching on Big Bash. I know before we hit record, we were saying neither of us have watched a heap of it. The two things that I have seen is Cooper Connolly keeps going well, and so there's a young bloke who's is going to be in contention, which we talked about the other week. But also Ollie Peake, fair little cameo to to get the Renegades across the line in a game that you probably didn't expect him to win against the Scorchers.
Yeah, yeah, there's fairly big raps on him from the younger pathway programs, and he's captain the under-19s for the Australian side, or as we speak, if they're not landed, they're almost there. So, yeah, there's fairly big raps on him across the program. But, yeah, the young fellas are going to keep coming through, and I guess that's the beauty of the Big Bash. There's obviously the old fellas that hang around, the Siddles and the like, and that draws a crowd. They've got a name, but it gives those younger fellas an opportunity to be able to step into that environment and perform and show what they can do. So he's certainly got some runs on the board and some highlight reels already.
Yeah, got some big raps on him. All right, I think that's probably all for the cricket, unless you've got anything else.
Yeah, no, mate, it was just, I don't know whether it was the Ashes or whether it's just summer and we're like this every year, but it was good to get the interest up for the cricket. The crowds were monstrous across the country, so hopefully that hangs around. The Big Bash is it's doing well here up in Brisbane as far as the crowds go, so hopefully that interest comes, mate, and we keep on looking after the Australian Test side and put it to bed and start talking about rugby league, mate.
We'll get to that, but just quickly, I think they said total 800,000 plus fans for the series, which, given two tests finish in 2 days and one in 3 days, that's unbelievable. And good to see everyone get involved. Rugby league, the sport that never sleeps. Fucking Lomax. I've seen a few Dragons fans going, oh, glad to be seeing the back of that bloke. But is he serious? Like, he's been given a conditional release to go chase the money. Then he was going to do UFC and whatever else he was going to do, play for the Brumbies. Now he's hired lawyers to try and get out of his conditional contract, which he signed and agreed to, so he can go and play for the Storm. I can't blame him, but seriously.
Yeah, it's a circus, right? That's the only word you can possibly use to it. There's no doubt that we've spoken about his manager a few times now. I hope he's not getting his 8% because he's just burning cash, whatever he's doing. But for him to have done what he's done and then turn around and go, I'm going to lawyer up and I'm going to fight the Eels about getting a release is just ridiculous, right? So I know at the end of the day he's trying to play football and he's trying to earn money and all these sort of things, but what's his word worth, right? He's walked out on the Dragons. He walked out on Para. Who's to say, if I'm the Storm, who's to say he's going to walk out on me in a year's time? Like, it's just an absolute circus. So for him, they'll come up with, I'm sure he'll play for the Storm next year. They'll come up with some sort of player swap. They're talking about Jack Howarth as an example. But
that would be unreal. I just can't see them doing that because he's a young player with much more
upside. But even if they do hawk, like, what's the sort of message it's sending, and what are we doing? Do you know what I mean? So this is the one I feel for the fans. I genuinely do. And the Para fans will be like the Dragons fans now. They just won't give a shit anymore. It'll be like Lomax.
We'll boo him.
Yeah. Correct.
Like we did Gutherson.
Yeah. So I don't know how it's going to end, but I can imagine it'll be some sort of player swap if the Storm are willing to give them someone they're keen on.
I don't know who, if you saw this, but Storm have just this morning confirmed that Nick Meaney and Tyron Wishart will not be there from 2027 onwards. Now, to me, I'd take Wishart, but I just don't know where he'd play for Para, because we're going youth for the one. We've got two young nines signed now. They've only signed Pezzett for 1 year because they wanted to then invest in youth in the halves. Yep. Does he play 13? Like, I don't know. Like, surely those two will end up at the Bears.
Yeah. So I know Meanies are confirmed for the Bears. I haven't heard whether Wishart's the Bears or somewhere else, but they were keen on him for a while. Yeah, Wishart probably doesn't fit in with what the Eels are doing. There's even talk that Hopwood could come off the bench in the middle for Paris. Oh, I don't know whether Wishart could play 13 there. I think they're probably overloaded in Wishart's roles. So he's going to be a really good pickup for the Bears. Versatile, he's come from a good program and he can play a few different positions, but I don't know whether it's going to help Para with a player swap for Lomax this time around.
No, I don't think so either. I'd still take him in a heartbeat because he's the sort of player that would be, he'd just find a way to add value, but like, I'm sure he doesn't want to go and play a bit part role, a bench role. Be interesting. We talked about the Bears at the end of last year and we're saying, what are they doing? But they are building nicely all of a sudden. They've got some real wholehearted players there. Sean Russell, that they signed, I don't think we talked – oh, we did talk about it last week. He's going to be solid. And if they've got Meany and Wishart going there, along with Liam Henry, Toby Sexton, the English bloke that we mentioned, like that's starting to be the nucleus of a decent squad. No, we're not talking top eight or anything, but they're going to be competitive. That's good.
Yeah, 100%, mate. They haven't had that, you know, blue chip signing, that Cam Munster sort of signing, but they've also gone through and picked solid first graders who they're not going to lose during Origin season. Are going to turn up week in, week out from pretty good programs that they've picked up. You know, the Penrith front rower, the Storm guys that you've just mentioned. So, yeah, it's not as bad as what was first thought. Obviously, there's still a long way to go to get to where they need to get to. But, yeah, the way they're going about it, they're not going to cop a flogging each week by the looks of it at this stage.
Mm-hmm. And just thinking about what the Dolphins did, was the whole, like, idea that they were lining up for the marquee player just a bit of a ruse to push the price up so they could have a crack at some of those guys on the periphery, maybe?
Yeah, quite possibly, mate. And obviously it doesn't hurt when you're sitting down with someone saying we're in negotiations with Munster. Like, you know, we're getting close, sign with us sort of thing. So, yeah, of course. And how much of it's getting driven by the player managers anyway for that? So you never know. But, yeah, look, they're signing pretty well. I know they've just announced a partnership up here with the East Tigers, who are in the Q Cup as their Queensland affiliate. So,
oh, really?
That'll help. Yeah. That'll help. They're a strong club with a good leagues club behind them and juniors. So that'll just help with another pathway. So, yeah, there's certainly things, you know, firing away in the background for them. Whether they, to your point, can push a couple of marquees and get into a top eight squad early, doesn't look like that's happening, but it also doesn't look like they're going to be battling for the spoon with those seasoned first graders.
Who will win the spoon next year, this year?
Oh, you know, I know we're going to talk to a bit of a season preview in the next week or two, but I think, and I don't want to sit on the fence, so I will name a team, but I think it's all going to come down to injuries. There's so many teams that are one marquee player away from either making the semis or coming last. It is genuinely frightening, but I'm going to lob on Manly. I think they, they're in for a slide. And you talk about injuries, you know, they're relying on poor old Turbo's hamstrings. History will tell you won't get through 26 rounds. But, I'm going to lob on Manly. That could come back and blow me up if Turbo plays every round they make the eight probably. But, I think they're in for a big slide. They're going to continue to slide, mate. I want to
see. I actually like that because there's no standout. Like, you could sit here and make a case for probably 14 of the teams.
Yeah.
Because as soon as they, like, if their depth is tested, at this time of year when everyone's fit, you're like, oh, yeah, everyone's got, you know, a sort of argument for an upside. But, yeah, it's actually not a bad shout. Turbo gets injured. Does Fogarty actually... Like, does he work in that system? We'll see how good he is without those young guns next to him and that big forward pack. Like,
yeah, that's right. Manly aren't going to go forward like Canberra did. Even Jake Trbojevic, obviously, is another year older himself. They're talking about potentially him starting in the front row. Paseka Cullen back off a year off with an injury, and they are really skinny up front, really skinny.
Well, that's what happened last year. Yeah, their big fellas, their key big fellas got injured early in the year, and they never recovered. They're probably one of those teams with their best 17. They're competitive, but yeah, actually, it's a bit of a bad shout. I'd love that too.
They've talked you into Manly winning the spoon already, mate. That didn't even take long, did it?
And do you know they've never won one?
Oh, is that right? Oh, well, yeah. I'm on them. That's it.
Yeah. Oh, mate, I have to find out
what they're offering for Manly doing the spoon, mate.
I've been copping shit from Manly fans for so long. That would be sweet. I'm with you. I think there's it will come down to injuries. I still like the Dragons. I know you won't like that, but I just think, yeah, you got a couple of old blokes there who were really good and played a lot of football last year. But if they don't, and then you've got quite a young side outside of that. Still a problem in the halves, and South, have they got halves yet?
They'll go with Walker and Humphreys to start the season. Humphreys got injured halfway through the year.
He played well.
But Souths are another classic example, right? Fully fit, 1-15, but 1-17, they make the semis, right? Latrell, fully fit. They got Fafita and Murray, et cetera. Kalamatangi, the future Dragon immortal. They've got a couple of injuries, and all of a sudden they become very skinny as well, especially again through the middle. So they're another team that are a couple of injuries away. There's a few teams with rookie coaches or first year coaches. You know, we're up here at the Titans, Newcastle. So the spoon battle could actually be one for the ages, mate. It could be what we're watching.
It could be. Actually, the Knights are definitely on a slide, but then they've. This lottery. It's an absolute lottery. I mean, think of how many experts in inverted commas picked the Raiders for the spoon last year.
Well, that's not going to happen, mate.
I think the Titans are still a massive shake, given they're one team that's got pretty poor depth. So I'm going to off the Dragons. I'm going with the Titans.
Mate,
like you said, we'll do a bit of a preview in a few weeks' time. There's not too much point in going into too much, but just for a bit of a laugh, I asked you that one because I saw this graphic the other day and it had like a ladder and it said for the first 16 places, it said, stop picking your ladder, it's too early in the year. And then the last one was Dragons.
Would have been done by a Bulldog fan, I guarantee you.
I still laughed. All right, wrap it up there. I think with the test players back playing the BBL, we might be able to get a bit more, but we'll see if there's any content for us to actually do one of these in the next few weeks, because we might be a bit light on, but we'll see how we go. One way or the other, there'll be more episodes coming up, and worst case is we can start doing a bit of your super coach stuff, mates. If people have any interest, maybe they can let us know.
Perfect, buddy.
Speak to you then, mate.
See you, buddy.
You've taken the time to listen to this whole episode. Now it's time to take action. Commit to one thing you've learned today and make it happen. And to avoid any obstructions, join the Sport is Life movement by clicking on the link in the show notes.